Greetings, kindred witches. Welcome to this episode of Atomic Witchcraft.
Here, we share our experiences as we build a modern-day inclusive witchcraft practice rooted in nature seasons, celestial cycles, and the science of energy.
Join us as we build a craft that learns from our past, is rooted in our present, and works toward building a better future, all while connecting deeply to the earth and sky around us.
Let us begin a new era of witchcraft. Hi everyone, I'm Ash, an atomic witch walking an eclectic road since the 90s.
I'm Alyssa, about 20 years in and growing a mostly green path.
And I'm Jay, new to the practice, composing a bard witch's craft. Because witch weaves together many webs, past, present, and future, we'd like to acknowledge that we are currently practicing our craft on the lands of the Coast Salish peoples, specifically the Duwamish, Muckleshoot, and Puyallup tribes.
The Atomic team participates in Real Rent, and we encourage you to engage with and contribute to similar programs in your area.
Welcome to our grove, here at the Atomic Hearth. Now, let's get witchy.
Welcome back to the Atomic Hearth. We are at the full moon, and I am wrapping up my dive into elixir magic. In our previous episode, I covered the overview of elixirs and of my own experience with it, as this is something I've spent some time on over the years, and how this round I'd be looking to expand my knowledge into some new and interesting drink mixing territory. I also share my process and recipe with you at the end, in case you'd like to follow in some similar footsteps in your own practice. But before we jump in, let's take it back to the basics. This time we'll be chatting about covens and communities, exploring the pros, cons, and things to keep in mind when it comes to being witchy with others.
While today's episode is going to pick up on our discussion around elixirs, we also wanted to provide space each full moon to address the infamous "where do I begin?" question with witchcraft. Now, if you've been practicing a while, don't skip ahead just yet. Consider how revisiting the foundational techniques and questions of our practices can actually provide more context, layers, depth, and space. A bit of a refresh reaffirmation moment, if you will. So we encourage everyone, no matter how long you've been practicing, to join us in re-exploring the foundations of our craft, especially if you find yourself pressed for time. Returning to the roots can be a great way to stay connected. This lunar cycle, we are touching on the topic of solo work versus coven work. Now, working with a group always sounds magical. Gathered together in a circle, everyone moving, maybe chanting together. And there is something magical about that. But working with a group also comes with some caveats that you don't really have when practicing solo. So I would say there are benefits to both, which is why some of us gather in community, but not in covens. And we're going to spend a moment talking about the difference between all of those. Solo practices are probably the most straightforward. Here, a witch practices alone while still gathering insight from others. Rituals are created and enacted alone, and may even have the extra layer of being in the broom closet or secretive, as there's a good deal of solo witches who work solo out of necessity, not necessarily desire. On the flip side, covens offer a very connected practice between usually a smaller group of people. Those big internet covens that have started to arise are a bit tricky and feel a little snake oil salesman-y to me. They should probably just be selling themselves as communities versus covens, because covens usually gather in person to work rituals, spells, and other aspects of the craft. They often have formal initiation process, including a time period where you're a guest until you essentially quote-unquote prove yourself. Now, what this looks like varies by traditions, and covens are often centered around a particular tradition. So this is one of the key differences between a coven and a community, at least in my book. Covens do require some sort of dues or fees to cover costs of group gatherings, and there may also be committees within covens, and some sense of hierarchy. Ultimately, covens are a little bit more intimate than communities, and tend to have a little bit more interpersonal dynamics. You'll also see terms like high priestess or priests may come in, but that will vary by tradition. In recent years, we're seeing more and more solo practitioners come together in community spaces, essentially stepping out of the broom closet so they can share festivals and sometimes rituals with other witchy-minded folks. Communities often consist of a diverse array of beliefs and traditions because when they do gather to celebrate, there is an overarching community culture that leads those group events, one that decenters any specific tradition, although there may be shared practices that become part of the culture. For instance, in our little community grove, it's non-deity with an elemental lens, which means we opt out of including deity in our shared spaces, even if the witches within the group do converse with deity. We also do include the elements, which often translates into altars or offerings for each. So now that we have a bit more shared understanding of these terms, let's talk pros and cons.
Like everything in life, there are pros and cons to joining a coven, a community, or neither. It just really depends on what you're looking for in your craft and what you're willing to tolerate in a group dynamic. Pros for joining a coven revolve mostly around expanding your practice. As a part of a coven, you are working closely together, so it's not unusual or inappropriate to ask for help on spells that you may need an extra boost for. These groups also form around or attract witches of particular belief sets, i.e. the worship of specific deities or focus on a specific path. This can really help you hone in on your own craft if you find one that you align with. You'll have folks around that you can learn from, others you can practice with, and rituals you can share in. There are a few cons to covens, though. There is often a hierarchy that exists within these groups, usually with a high priest or priestess, as Ash mentioned, at the head, and additional, quote, ranks that accompany. These people often dictate how things are supposed to run, what rituals are performed when, and who is worthy to, quote, ascend. If you have issues with authority, as I do, then a coven like this might not be your cup of tea. Another con is a little bit more of an interpersonal one. Since coven members tend to work together rather closely, sometimes, not always, drama may rise to the surface. It's something I've personally witnessed and heard about from more than one witch. If you're not interested in dynamics like this, then trust your instincts when it comes to joining a group, and know it's okay to walk away if you feel the need. If the above doesn't sound terribly appealing to you, then you may be better suited for joining a witchy community. One of the biggest pros of this is having a wide variety of witches to connect with. Often communities are filled with folks from all kinds of paths, and if you are a jack-of-all-trades type witch or merely someone who is curious, this could be really beneficial. These groups are also less structured and more casual, so meetups and conversations can branch outside the practice to book clubs, going to the movies, or just grabbing a cup of coffee. However, unlike a coven, communities don't necessarily have the same level of practice focus, so it may not be a good resource for shared spell work or ritual necessarily. That's not to say that you can't find a handful of folks to help you out, but you may not get that, quote, full coven strength to help give your workings a boost. There's also no initiation to these groups. You can just join a community. And then, of course, there's always the option of being a totally solo practitioner. The benefits are that you practice your craft on your schedule in your way. It also allows you to be a low-key witch, so if you are still in the broom closet, you won't be accidentally outed. But we are tribal creatures by nature, so finding a community to share in can be quite beneficial.
Now, knowing which of these options is right for you is, well, very personal. You might work strictly solo or strictly in a coven, or maybe a mix. You may also not associate with a coven, but have found a small community or grove instead. All of these are valid options, and don't be afraid to try things out or change things up once in a while. Now, I do just want to say here that being in a coven isn't and shouldn't be a sign of validation, as though you have finally made it as a witch. Not all covens are created equal, and just joining a coven doesn't make you a witch. So, you know, find a path that actually speaks to your craft. In my past, I've tried a few different routes. In my youth, I was definitely part of a more formal coven, but for me personally, I really find that being a solo practitioner, paired with a smaller community like our grove here, is really the sweet spot. It allows me to have the control of the minutiae of my practice while still coming together in community around some of the bigger aspects, like our values and festivals. And while being in a community will always have its ups and downs, a grove is a little less personally intertwined than, say, a coven, which also allows me as a solo practitioner a bit more leeway in the details of my practice. Now, obviously, the three of us might have a little bias toward community groups, but Alyssa J., what do you consider when selecting how or even if to engage with others in your practice?
Yeah, honestly, following my intuition is number one. I've engaged with groups that seemed really great on the surface, but I just got a really weird feeling in my gut, so I stopped. I just wouldn't go anymore. But I also sometimes feel an instinct to share about my practice, even if I don't know that someone is, quote, witchy, only to find out that they too are part of the craft, or at least have an interest in it. You know, my biggest advice is just, like, trust your instincts. You know best, and your subconscious knows the best. But if I am researching groups, I look for ones that have the same values as myself. If they're queer-friendly, trans-inclusive, avoid appropriation, work on being anti-racist, etc. if I come across a group that uses turfy language or includes Norse symbols that are also used by white supremacists, and that is a big red flag and a big nope from me. Outside of our little grove of the three of us here and the bigger community that we have begun to craft, I do like to practice solo. I enjoy festival celebrations and group rituals, but for spell work and daily moments, I prefer to keep to myself. It's not that I don't think working with others isn't valuable, I've just got such a me way of doing things, and a lot of my work is very internal, so I just don't do a lot of daily craft alongside other witches. But Jay, how about you?
Well, for me, as you two well know, my witchy story began because of our little grove, by way of inviting my formerly normie self to a wonderful little ritual, and it's been all full moons and altars for me since. That said, one of the things I love about our crew is that although it was just the three of us, because it wasn't a formal coven, I was free but also supported in developing a solo practice of my own. The community approach feels like the right balance for me, one where diversity is welcome, but support, especially for a newbie like me who doesn't need to like get in super deep, I'm just learning a lot, that's in close proximity. You know, I've never been a part of or explored covens, but I can relate a little bit in my experience with tight-knit faith groups of my past. Definitely felt the pros of deeper connections and powerful possibilities with the cons of potential for melodrama and toxic power dynamics. Even in my Christian days, I tried to find groups aligned with my values, so LGBTQ+ members, inclusive language, engagement with multi-faith efforts, a lot of what you mentioned, Alyssa. So for me, though, I would say paramount, my solo practice really is my particular specialty, and it's particularly special to me. It allows me to easily and frequently weave together my more general witchy learning that's, you know, started surface level and it's getting deeper now with just the really personal stuff, the shadow work. Having a supportive community is also really wonderful sometimes to share that work with, but there's plenty of things I just keep to myself, and they're no less meaningful because I did so.
Yeah, I think one of the other things that can be overlooked in communities, and this is true of covens, is, right, you tend to get a mentorship, right? And that's one of the things that a coven will offer. And it'll be very specific in that tradition. So you may be studying Gardenian witchcraft and choose to be initiated into a Gardenian coven. And they are going to have, you know, depths of knowledge around that tradition that you probably can't get from a book. But if you are a solo practitioner, especially a solo practitioner with a little bit more of an eclectic practice like ours, right, where we kind of weave together some different things, maybe not deity focused, and this is really actually more true of our non-deity witches, deity focused groups tend to have a lot of covens, tend to have a lot of stuff built into them, whereas non-deity, we're kind of out here fending for ourselves a little bit.
A little bit more nebulous.
So we're a little bit more nebulous. but that doesn't take down the quality or potential in a community to find a mentor. And I think that that is also a really great potential about communities, is because there is such a diverse group of people at the table, so to speak, you can find a mentor that works for you, that can help you through your craft. If you do have questions, if you are starting out, finding that, you know, those voices that can help you, guide you, you can still get, you know, help from your spell work in a community. It's just going to be a little different than in a coven.
Yeah. You know, you're making me realize that as I am getting my foundations really solid, I'm trying to lean more into this bard witch path. I would love to find another bard witch, a more experienced bard witch, to like really learn from a mentor standpoint. That would be an amazing relationship to build on. And that segues me into something I also wanted to speak on, which is, how does one go and find people?
How do you find
a mentor or a community or a coven? I was very lucky because I basically married into this group, specifically with Alyssa.
To be fair, we also like will hand out business cards to people. That's true. We'll find out that way.
But you know, if you're looking for one for yourself and it doesn't just fall into your life like that, there's a number of options. Of course, you can consider, you can check out social networks, Facebook, meetup groups are often, you know, you can search and find a variety of in-person events or engagement opportunities. Even the Witch Sky hashtag on Blue Sky can be a useful place to start to make some digital connections, make some online friends with other witches. Reddit's a popular one for sure, with popular subreddits like Witches versus the Patriarchy and SAS Witches. SAS standing for Skeptical, Agnostic, and Science Seeking.
Yeah, we love that group. Yeah, we love those groups.
We do indeed. And there's also Mandragora Magica, a web directory of covens and communities around the world, which offers a really deep resource. Just keep a mindful eye, because this is like everything and all kinds of groups, and some of the groups in there may not fit your interests, may not fit your values. It's a pretty broad slate. Yeah. So, you know, sort of buyer beware, browser beware there. it's not all going to be one flavor. It's kind of a broad, broad mix of pagan, witchy, you know, you name it, kind of groups on there.
And I'm always going to, you know, give the shout out to for the Irish Pagan School and their communities. Yes. They've got some great communities. They do a monthly a gathering. It's worth getting invited to and spending some time with if that is your brand of witchcraft.
Absolutely. And as always, just a reminder that if you are meeting strangers, especially internet strangers, please meet in public places. Please refrain from sharing personal information about yourself unless you know them a bit better, because there's a lot of ulterior means and motives out there for folks looking to make new connections.
Very much so.
We still need to practice stranger danger.
Stranger danger is real.
Indeed. Trust your instincts, just like Alyssa said. If something doesn't seem right, if you've barely met someone and they're asking for like a list of your fears and your social security number, that's not normal.
Yeah. And that's true. You want to be very careful with your private information. There's a lot of folks out there who even will offer to do spell work for you and such. And again, please be mindful about who you give your personal information to. No matter what, how you end up practicing may be a result of choice or circumstance, but how your craft shows up for you is a valid path, no matter how simple or complex, how public or private it is. It can all happen within your own mind, or perhaps you do reach out in search of community. If you're interested in joining our Digital Grove, you can join us over on Discord, and if you are in the local Seattle area, we offer yearly gatherings for the Atomic community. Hope to see you there.
Previously on Atomic Witchcraft. In our New Moon Brew episode, kicking off my elixirs topic, I shared the beginnings of this particular visit to one of my favorite focus areas, the world of brews, drafts, magical drinks. Here in our full moon focus, I'll take you through how everything went through these lunar cycles. It was an interesting experience of finding ways to expand my knowledge of elixir work, and per usual, came with some unexpected twists. So with that said, let's dive in. As I mentioned last time, elixir magic's been a favorite topic of mine for a few years now, dabbling a bit each year to some degree, and developing some tried and true methods in making some magical and honestly pretty tasty elixirs. So for these last three lunar cycles, my goal was to take what I know and go a bit further. The overall way of pulling together an elixir, no matter how complex or simple, is all about intentionality and attention to the details. Develop your intent, intentionally choose the ingredients and elements and methods, and combine to enjoy and experience your drinkable creation. My challenge this time was to explore things I hadn't done before in terms of methods and recipe design, and then apply through an intentful process which revolved around a particular goal of mine. For instance, in the past I've made elixirs by simply stirring them up together, maybe freezing some ingredients ahead of time, and the incorporation of homemade elements like syrups and bitters. But what about brewing, steeping, aging? There's so many ways to make a beverage, and ultimately the methods aren't just fun ways of crafting, but in themselves offer new intentful connections. An elixir that requires brewing could be chosen for the connection to fire, heat, and even transformation, as heated molecules change state from liquid to gas and bubble up to the surface. You could see a natural connection here right into an air and aroma element in the process. It's all up to the elixir maker and what means something in the context of their elixir's intentful design. For method expansion for myself this round, I ended up settling on the idea of brewing through fermentation. From a mundane point of view, I've always been playing with the idea of brewing beer, and I could feel a connection with the intent coming together for me, which, if you recall from last time, was settling on this idea of found stillness. The thing about fermentation is the yeast needs time to do its thing. There's simply no shortcutting the time element. We simply set it up and wait. That idea started to snowball a bit further into more elements quite naturally. So I started by journaling and meditating further to dig a little bit deeper. I asked myself some prompts like, where is there stillness? What does it look, sound, smell, taste, or feel like? Is this a stillness of calm, of stasis and inactivity? Or is it a chosen stillness of mindfully stopping with purpose? This phrase, hurry up and wait, kept coming to my mind too. But why? Alongside journaling and words, I doodled a bit too. Honestly, thanks to my sigils topic this year, I'm totally hooked on doodling as an extended form of journaling. Sometimes my little symbols shape my ideas and thoughts better than any words really can. I drew some tarot as a part of my reflections, as I often do. My intent here definitely came from my work life, where things have been speeding up, and I wanted to more wisely notice and act on moments where a focused stillness was worth making time for. Stepping out of the ongoing stream of new things to do can be a real challenge, but making a point to give something the time and room it needs can be so valuable. So my hope for this elixir's magic was to empower me to resist the urge to keep moving forward and to slow down or pause when it's the real best thing to do in that moment. So for the tarot, I did a 3-card spread, past, present, future, asking, what will this elixir work accomplish, change, or affect for my work life? A little sidebar, I took the opportunity to develop my tarot work a little further by considering the framework Ash walked through in the tarot workshop she recently did. If you haven't checked it out, go check it out. It was so helpful. So for the past and present cards, I got 2 number cards, so connecting to my own choices and actions. First, for past, I drew the Ace of Swords, so element of air for the suit of swords, so like thinking and ideas, ace, tying to beginnings, potential. This didn't really surprise me, as the recent months of breaking through into new things definitely drew me to this intent and kind of the problem space to solve here, this whole world of like lots of beginnings and lots of new ideas. Next, for present, I drew the 7 of Wands, element of fire for wants, so passion, drive, and 7, connecting to investigation, reevaluation of something. Again, this felt like right in line with my hopes for this elixir. Through the wisdom to stop and wait when it's best, my hope was to better accomplish things with care, to really kind of take the time to investigate and pay attention to the details. For future, I drew a face card, so connecting to specific people here. I drew the Page of Coins reversed. An element of earth for coins, so in my mind, stability, maybe growth or strength, and a page for a beginner or student. This is likely me here, as in my job, I'm currently finishing my first year in a new position, so I'm still kind of new. And an interesting prediction, right? I mean, would this approach struggle to take root in my work? Would I need to fight imposter syndrome a little bit? Would an earthly force require me to wait when I'm trying to hurry? Thinking of that hurry up and wait theme showing up in my journaling, this had me thinking on how found stillness feels like the choice of wisdom and might require overcoming my own worries about falling behind in those moments when I just need to be patient. I do find reverse cards are ultimately the shadow work peeking through. The more I get in my spreads, the more complex my work often ends up being. So there was just one this time.
Darn reversed cards.
Now, all that said, my work life is not likely what you're listening for right now to hear like all about. So, but like I wanted to share this as an example, as I really can't emphasize enough how working on a clear intent makes a huge difference in spell work like this, especially with elixirs. And ultimately, you don't have to make elixirs for spells, but that is what I did this round, so I wanted to kind of break that down. So my tarot has always provided me lots of deep thoughts and ideas, and ultimately solidified that this was a good direction to go in, keeping in mind a little bit of shadow work to throw in there for balance, aka what to let go of in order to attain the found stillness and the benefits thereof. My intent feeling solid, I began the process of elixir designing. Typically, I like to cover four aspects of choices here, which all equate to different elements of storytelling, to refer back to something I mentioned last time. The vessel, or container. This is the setting of a story, providing the overall shape and grounding of it. As we're talking about a liquid medium here, the shape of the vessel and its material and origins is going to create a lot of the overall impression of the elixir. For me, I wanted something on the smaller size to represent focus, something clear for clarity, so glass for sure, and perhaps something which I'd used in the past for a purpose requiring waiting or stillness.
Come with that pre-imbued energy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's really clever.
Second are the ingredients. These are the characters. And as the main character of this is stillness, I decided I wanted all my ingredients to require some level of patience or waiting in their own creation. So everything needed to be something that required like aging, steeping, maybe cultivating at a certain growing time.
I love this idea of the ingredients as characters.
Mm-hmm.
Nice layer.
So setting, characters, and now the for third are like colors, symbolism, and scents. These are like, it fills out the genre of the story. I almost think of them as the costumes or the soundtrack of the film. Elixir work is a multi-sensory experience, so I wanted to decorate my elixir's vessel, the liquid itself perhaps, and the scents, either of the elixir in the air or just like in the air while I'm making it and having it, to channel that feeling of stillness and patience. I honestly wasn't too clear on what this would come together like, but I find these things always find a way to show up just how they're meant to if you're clear on your intent and you just kind of keep your sensors sensing. And fourth, finally, I like to jot down a few thoughts of intention, like a statement of conviction for the overall intent. Mine was stillness in the choice to lean in, drink deep of the moment, and commit focus and time. All else must stop to accomplish some things. This elixir will provide a girding of the spirit to be still and let but one thing happen as it should. With all that laid out, my goal here was to make my choices and finalize my recipe by the first full moon, so I could then go find everything I needed by the second new moon, make the elixir on the second full moon, leaving the third lunar cycle to reflect and even have some time to adjust my recipe and approach a bit for a second round. It was a foolproof plan. I was sure nothing would go awry at all, and it would all happen just as I expected.
I was laughing even as you said it.
Does anybody want to cue the Benny Hill music? We can play that behind us next bit. So just after that first full moon, before I even had a chance to make any choices on anything I just mentioned, work went bananas. New, important, urgent work sprung up left and right. Suddenly I was traveling for work unexpectedly with only a moment's notice. Then another work trip was scheduled before I even had come home from the first trip, and it was only in 2 weeks. In the very water-heavy theme of this topic, I had planned an easy crossing of a river, only for a sudden increase in the current to begin as soon as I began wading in. It felt a little like the scene in Lord of the Rings when Arwen calls in the horses of water.
Yes.
Yeah, it's a little like that. It became a real challenge to spend any time on my elixir work for weeks. As the second full moon passed and my third lunar cycle began, I had made no further progress. I'll be honest, I was getting really frustrated. This must have been the whole hurry up and wait thing in my mind, and it's like just showing up. But I mean, like, what the heck? Like, did I ask for found stillness and promptly receive the opposite in return? But amidst the chaos of red-eye flights and juggling deadlines, I made the tiniest of steps when I could. In one small moment, it hit me that the best vessel was a bitters bottle I had used a few years ago to make bitters for a blend which took a few months of patient infusing and blending to complete. On a plane ride at one point, I pulled out my sketchbook, and the colors and some symbolism that fit my intent came flowing out onto the page. A random conversation about ginger beer and how ginger root in particular is grown and harvested spurred what I needed for my core ingredient, my main character, which inspired a few more that would round out the recipe. It wasn't until the third new moon arrived that it hit me that I was doing the work of found stillness. I was living in the reality of ongoing motion, for it's only fair to assume the world's always going to keep on turning around you. And finding moments to pause, lean in, drink deep of the moment, and commit some focus and time.
You know, you did say in your first episode that you wanted to be at the eye of the hurricane. This feels very apt.
Be careful.
I got to pay attention to the words I picked, don't I?
Be careful what you wish for.
It didn't need to be a ton of time in each of these moments, although occasionally it required an act of choice to block out distraction and other needs. But by the time I arrived at the peak of the third new moon, I had everything I needed for my recipe, and a perfect evening for it seemed to arrive out of nowhere. As I built it, piece by piece, which I'll explain at the end of the episode in a little elixir recipe breakdown, an incantation came to mind, which I repeated as it came to be, before I drank, and once after. Aged in stillness, waiting in time, may this elixir highlight the signs that patience and focus is what I now need to hold fast, be still, watch, and take heed. The result...
Yeah, that was good.
It just came to me.
That was nice.
That was pretty fun.
Mine don't rhyme so nicely.
No. Well,
a little bit of bird witch showing up.
She's a better writer than she lets on.
Yeah.
The result was everything I'd hoped. I did find that the elixir strengthened the feeling I was searching for, but more than that, the journey in making the elixir come to life was what really taught me how to find that good stillness. As spell work tends to be for me, it was another eye-opening whirlwind experience. And as for exploring new methods in my elixir work, I definitely want to keep playing with methods of aging, timing, fermentation, steeping, all these unique ways to choose ingredients and work them in ways which unlock wonderful, attained aspects and flavors. Now, I know y'all have some questions. That was a whole big story. So before I just keep on rambling, I will finally take a sip of water and we can dive right in.
This hurry up and wait principle seemed to come up a lot here. So for those not familiar, this concept shows up in show business quite a bit, and I'm sure other places, but it's the concept that we have to do a lot of work very quickly, then settle in and wait until the next moment where we again have to do a lot of work very quickly. In theater, we use this term backstage when moving sets between scenes. There's a hurry up to get the set moved between the scenes and then the wait while the scene happens on stage. In this case, you know, we saw it kind of manifest for you. What other lessons on spell work and just in general did come up from that?
Yes. I've also heard this is the unofficial policy of government work or serving in the military. Hurry up.
Wow.
So you can wait. The hurry up and wait.
Well, that's a whole different kind of possibility. Oh, it's like, you hurry up so that you can wait on others versus like hurry up and you have to now wait.
That's actually more of what I found. So the hurry up and wait thing showed up in my initial meditations and journaling. It turns out it was a bit of a premonition that I didn't realize at the time of getting all my process ready before having to wait patiently for the right time to just come along and arrive, and I could not make it move any faster. And yet, this really is what this experience and my intent was kind of all about. Hurrying up to get my process set meant that I was able to find those moments of stillness amidst the chaos with a plan in mind. Even if I only had a few minutes or hours to make progress, in those moments I wasn't starting from scratch, I was ready. And I think maybe the lesson I could glean from it all was kind of an alternative way to say hurry up and wait, which is plan to wait. I'm starting to learn that it's a wise approach to spell work and any kind of plans for life to value both that upfront time at the beginning of something by asking lots of questions and being willing to dive in deep really quickly with the expectation that your timeline is likely going to adjust, be interrupted, be prolonged in ways it's meant to, or even speed up and be a shorter timeline than you expect. But either way, you're ready. I'm learning to enjoy the waiting, to cherish it as crucial processing time, internally or for external factors, for the moment to arrive as it's meant to, and then to swiftly act upon that moment without feeling rushed or unprepared. An affirmation phrase that's been on my mind is, the window will come and you'll be ready for it.
Now, as far as the hands-on process goes, what challenges did you hit on this sort of practical work level?
One of the challenges with choosing to try out work with fermentation was making sure I could tend to it properly once I got it started. As you'll hear in my full recipe in just a moment, the main character of this recipe turned out to be homemade ginger beer, which requires the use of some instant yeast to create the carbonated fizziness that's so satisfying and fun. On the one hand, you've got to give the yeast time to do its thing, processing sugars to produce the carbonation, but you also need to keep up with venting the pressure that bubbles once a day. The thought of my ginger beer exploding in our pantry definitely had me a bit worried, so I had to pick a good starting day to begin the rhythm. But of course, my worries were like a little outsized. It's not a grenade. And it was honestly a super easy daily chore to pull out the bottle, let it burp, as they say. I did learn that fermentation also needs warmth to work best. The first place I stored the bottle was on the cool side, and most of the ingredients were from the fridge, so they were cold, so it all got off to this really slow start. Once I realized this and shifted it to a spot nearer to one of our heat vents, activity like kicked up a notch all of a sudden. So that was like a practical learning I learned about working with yeast and fermentation.
Now, stillness is a challenge for a lot of folks, and I know you spent a lot of time with it. So what about you? What was your biggest challenges? What can you offer folks who are also challenged?
Oh, stillness. On the one hand, I've always had a deep love for stillness. There's nothing I love more than the still silence standing out amidst a gentle snowfall. And I adore meditation. And I am the kind of introvert who could just sit and look out a window all day and be happy as a clam. Like that is a part of my personality. That said, I also got out of undergrad at the height of the post-recession hustle culture moment in America. And sometimes, especially in my work life, I can obsess about momentum and fast-paced progress. I've tried to ditch it and grow out of that actively as I've gotten older, but like it can rear its head when I least expect it. And that was where the whole stillness elixir idea really found its inception. And I'd say that that's also why I love elixir work so much, because in many ways, it is itself a practice that requires slowing down, leaving the rat race of life behind to zoom in on finding significance in the little details of things. And so building on that theme, for all my ingredients for this elixir, I wanted them to represent an element of forced waiting, patience, careful cultivation. So three things came to mind. Honey, as the slow-moving end result of buzzing activity and cultivation. Then I went with aged scotch as the long-awaited, well-timed result of a rich and complex creation process, many elements and steps. Fresh ginger, which specifically must be harvested at a moment in the middle of the growth cycle of ginger root when it's mature just to the right level, after which you must wait until full maturation for it to be harvested properly for things like ginger root powder and like dried ginger and things like that. And then fermentation, I've already mentioned, it requires waiting and processing for the yeast to do its thing. And the yeast itself must be grown and fed before it can be processed into dry yeast for commercial use. So, you know, waiting all the way down. Teach me to be still could be the tagline for an Elixir 101 book, as far as I'm concerned. Moving too quickly or pulling things together out of convenience or haste will at best result in a weakly effective result.
Now, this topic closes out the year for you. We started with protection talismans in the spring, then sigils for summer, and onto familiars for fall, and now ending the year with elixirs. How are you feeling about this yearly cycle? Do you have pros? Do you have cons?
First, I'm just amazed at how many new ideas and experiences this year has brought, with only 5 topics, also including my year-long creative project topic, of course. I'm really pleased with how many topics ended up flowing really naturally into each other. Starting with protection had me working with energy. Moving to sigils connected energy to imagery. Then in familiars, that imagery expanded into animal symbolism and wisdom, including lessons of patience from the barred owl in our backyard. And wouldn't you know it, I ended up incorporating an owl's eye as a spiral in the sigil, which perfectly visualized my found stillness intent, and I drew that in colored pencil, which I got from my Siddles work, upon some ribbon, which I tied around the neck of my elixir vessel.
It's all connected.
And I promise you, I had no idea that would all happen like that. I will say that this amount of topics worked great for someone of my level of experience, which is still in my initial years of my witchcraft practice, as it allowed several to be fairly like light 101 pure learning topics. I think if I wanted to dig into something especially deeply, or if I were a more seasoned witch and wanted more complex exploration, I could see value in maybe one or two fewer topics for the year, but 4 3-cycle topics plus 1-year-long topic was just perfect for me to enjoy and tie together on this particular lap around the sun.
Any thoughts for your topics or adjustments to the Witch's Web process for next year?
Now that I've got a feel for the rhythm, I think the planning for and beginning at the spring equinox will definitely feel a little more informed this time. In that, I might see if I want to do a double topic for something I want to spend more time on, or even if I want to hold space for rest in the year ahead. If I know a particular season or moment will be especially busy, I can give myself that. That said, just as this elixir experience taught me at maybe the busiest I've been in years, just because you have a lot going on doesn't mean you can't find stillness amidst that chaos. The wheel of the year, the turning of the world, it's going to keep on chugging along regardless. So being willing to take part and thrive in the rhythm of that dance might be the witchiest lesson of all. Right now, the restfulness of midwinter is my focus, but I'm already looking forward to more of that whirling and dancing as the winter turns to spring. So for this full moon, I offer my process here on how I crafted my elixir of found stillness for those wishing to do the same. This particular elixir was crafted as a spell, so it includes a spell cast element for the actual combination of ingredients and drinking of it. Elixir work is full of intent and richly personal, so feel free to consider this a broad outline with details included as examples. I encourage anyone to replace ingredients, methods with things that resonate best for you to help you find those meaningful moments to slow down and wait in your busy life. Step 1, develop your intent. As with any kind of spell work, your first step needs to be an examination of the thing you desire. What are you trying to manifest, attract, banish, which this elixir will help to make true, in tandem with the mundane actions in life to achieve the result you have in mind. I pursue this with some mindfulness and meditation practices. Journaling is great. Spending time tapping in on the astral can be helpful, and doodling too can open some doors for you if you're a visually minded person. As a helpful companion, this is a good time to do some divination work too, to take what's coming to your mind and heart and explore it on a deeper level. For me, tarot work is a handy way to get out of my own way mentally, to get past my unconscious biases and expectations, and uncover what I already know deeper down. This step should end with being able to articulate the intent of your elixir clearly, however best works for you. For me, that's a short sentence or two to explain it, and maybe even a short title of sorts, which I then use as sort of a label of the elixir recipe. In this case, my intent was stillness in the choice to lean in, drink deep of the moment, and commit focus and time. All else must stop to accomplish some things. This elixir will provide a girding of the spirit to be still and let but one thing happen as it should. My title was Found Stillness. Step 2, plan and prep for your elixir, aligned with your intent. With your intent solid in your mind and easy to connect to, use that connection to start brainstorming a bit about what's going to go into your elixir work. This is where I like to connect to that storytelling idea. The intent is the protagonist or the main character of the story. So from there, the setting is the vessel and the ingredients are the main character and supporting cast. And then added sensory elements like colors and aromas are what fill out the genre of that story. For my vessel, I wanted glass for clarity and some connection to found stillness, so I used a bitters dropper bottle I'd used for holding my own blends of bitters years back, which had required a couple of months of patient efforts to make. For my ingredients, my main character would be the well-timed character of fresh ginger, with the supporting cast of honey, aged scotch, two things each requiring elements of waiting and patience. The ginger I would turn into ginger syrup, a recipe requiring an hour of steeping the simmered ginger and sugar before straining. I also chose the method of fermentation, which also required elements of waiting and patience. For my colors and sensory elements, the genre of found stillness was established with some color and symbolism. Through some doodling, turning to symbol drawing, a sigil came together, which visually said found stillness to me. I'll share a look at it on Patreon so you could check it out too. One interesting thing that came up here was my recent familiar's work, inspiring a spiral at its center, inspired by the image of a focused owl's eye. With your vessel, ingredients, and any extra bits planned out in alignment with your intent, it's time to gather and process things for the moment of creation, which I personally timed to an upcoming new moon, to lean into a lunar moment of energetic stillness. Step 3. Create the elixir. This is the spellcast moment for me. As you create the elixir with the ingredients and methods you planned and picked out, I recommend creating a full sensory experience of it all. Casting a circle to focus in on your creation work, music, and aroma can add to an encompassing experience, channeling everything in your mind and actions into the magical effort at hand. For me, I love to incorporate an incantation, and I tend to write it up right in the moment as my energy and imagination work together in the atmosphere of the intent I have in mind. My incantation for this elixir, which I said once as I mixed it, once before I drank, and once again after, was: aged in stillness, waiting in time, may this elixir highlight the signs that patience and focus is what I now need to hold fast, be still, watch, and take heed. Step 4. Don't forget the mundane. This ain't Baldur's Gate, people. While your elixir may be potent, as can be, with intention and meaning, the magic of change must also translate into your mundane choices and actions in support of your intense goal. For me, this elixir's found stillness challenged me to act in those moments when I could sense stillness was the right choice. If I charged past and ignored that feeling, then I wouldn't be doing myself any favors. Gotta find that stillness and make the most of it. The window will come, and you'll be ready for it. I hope my light process and recipe provides a fun and intentful way to do a bit of elixir magic. Happy brewing! That wraps up our full moon focus episode on elixirs. We hope you'll join us again just before the new moon for our next new moon brew featuring Alyssa's fourth and final subject, ice. We'll also bring you more from Charting the Celestial, Resistance Radio, and checking out how our creative passion projects are progressing along this year.
In the meantime, join us on Patreon for podcast updates and team news. It's free to join, and there are lots of resources to explore.
And if you're interested in community, you can always find us on our Discord server. Links to join are in the episode info.
And until next time,
keep your world witchy.